Hey. Oh, shucks. I'm not hearing it. Okay, so increase that. Hey, okay.
It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
That's not good. The monitor's wrong. Well, crud, I have no idea. Let's jump over com. Okay, let's see.
The non-radio
no, it's playing out of some other output. Where is it? Huh. Sorry, guys. One moment. Output is configured there. Sound preferences. Output. Who's this guy? Well, let me see.
You're listening to another.
No, I can't do it that time. 1 second.
Harry Herzog and Judge Gilbert Azibert were accused of corruption. A lawyer for Azibert asked for the trial to be suspended because his client was high risk of contracting COVID-19 given a long-term heart condition. The judge has ordered an independent medical assessment by Thursday before deciding whether to go ahead with the trial or suspend it. Though Sarkozy won't be the first modern French president head of state in the dock, his predecessor and political mentor Jacques Chirac was convicted of embezzlement. He is the first to face corruption charges. So we'll see how that happens, how that plays out. Keep on going here. This is a pretty chilling, harrowing story here. A Saudi surgeon has died at work in a hospital operating room. This is coming to us from the BBC. A surgeon in Saudi Arabia has died in a hospital operating room where he was set to perform an orthopedic procedure, according to Saudi media. Mahid Al-Imari suffered a heart attack and died on Friday at the Khamis Mushait Civil Hospital, reports Al-Watan Daily website. Colleagues noticed that the doctor appeared ill and convinced him to get tested for heart problems. It is not known if he operated on the patient after the electrocardiogram. When Imari, this headline was deceiving. When Imari was present to perform a surgery for one of his patients, we noticed signs of fatigue on him and he suffered from pains in his stomach. The head of the orthopedic department at the hospital is quoted as saying by the newspaper. The doctor explained that Mr. Amari initially refused to undergo a test and insisted he would perform the surgery on the patient, but he was eventually persuaded to get an electro.
coming up with this. Can you hear me? I have two microphone options. Option one. And option two. Okay, how about this? Is this any better? No fun. How about this? Oh, it's not a gun. Wonder what's going on. You know what? I'm going to disable. Okay. Yeah, there's going to be echo. Because I'm in a small room with no treatments. The office is so sterile. It's stifling. Oh, yeah. It definitely doesn't. I'm going to disable Bluetooth. Okay, so I'm gonna be all right. Okay, so I'm flying deaf, I guess, basically. I'm just talking at the computer. I don't have a monitor, so such is life. Let's go ahead and get started. We're already 10 minutes in almost, and we haven't gotten it out yet. So thanks for bearing with me. Let's go ahead and get going. First up, world news. Haitian fuel tanker blast kills dozens. More than 50 people have been killed after a fuel tanker exploded in northern Haiti, officials say. Reports say the vehicle was involved in an accident in the city of Cap Haitien, and the victims had been trying to gather leaking fuel when it ignited. Local hospitals have been overwhelmed by those injured in the blast. Prime Minister Ariel Henry said the entire Caribbean nation was grieving after the accident as he declared 3 days of mourning. "I learned with desolation and emotion the sad news of the explosion last night in Cap Haitien," he wrote on Twitter on Tuesday. Pictures posted on social media show an intense blaze at the scene of the accident in Haiti's second largest city. One witness described the blast as hell. You'll remember there was a story out of Africa a couple weeks ago of a very similar event. A truck was leaking fuel, and people ran up to try and collect it. And when they collected it, it caught fire, and 50 or 100 people died. So if you see a giant gasoline truck leaking fuel, run away. Don't go towards it. Don't try and collect the fuel. 7 people have been killed after a car carrying migrants crashes in southern Hungary. You'll remember a terrible story out of Mexico where several dozen people were killed. Thankfully, the death count is much smaller here. Hungarian authorities say 7 migrants were killed and 4 other people injured after the vehicle they were traveling in crashed into a house near the border with Serbia. The incident took place on December 13th in the southern village of Moralholm, when the driver of the car refused to stop for a police check and tried to escape at high speed. The vehicle, which had a Serbian license plate and was carrying 10 migrants, then crashed into a house and rolled over. True, Bob Jonkman. You remember in Mexico, also with the fuel pipelines, they had to shut some of the fuel pipelines down because so many illegal taps were on the line that they couldn't maintain pressure. Those injured include the driver and 3 migrants. Police said the driver was detained and that the proceedings against him would be launched for people trafficking and causing a fatal accident. The so-called Balkan route to wealthier European Union countries is used by migrants and refugees escaping conflict, hardship, and persecution. The number of migrants illegally entering the EU by crossing the Western Balkans has almost doubled this year, the bloc's border agency Frontex said in August, with the majority coming from Syria and Afghanistan. Yeah, I agree, Leonji. It is very hard to believe that this keeps happening, but people are so desperate for fuel, they are throwing all caution to the wind, all common sense out the window. Tunisian president, we've had an update out of Tunisia, which I think is probably good news for us. Tunisian president announces constitutional referendum and sets a new election date. Tunisian President Kais Saied on Monday said Tunisia would hold a constitutional referendum next July, exactly a year after he seized broad powers and moved his opponents call a coup, and that parliamentary elections would follow at the end of 2022. In a speech on national television, Saied announced a popular consultation with the Tunisian people and said that other draft constitutional and other changes will be put forward to referendum on July 25, 2022, exactly a year after he sacked the government and seized wide-ranging powers. Changes to the constitution would follow the public online consultation, and parliament would remain suspended until a new one was elected. His power grab on July 25th initially won support from many Tunisians, tired of political parties seen as deeply corrupt and incapable of solving the country's deep economic woes. But he has since faced mass demonstrations and growing accusations that he is becoming a new autocrat. Human rights groups have repeatedly warned against the trial of civilians in military courts. So, this is going to be a big test, because if he actually goes through with it and we get a different leader, meaning that he doesn't end up just seizing power in a sham election, then we can think Tunisia's on the right path. But if he does try to seize power, we'll know that it's pretty risky, pretty much lost there. Speaking of political corruption, we got some more for you. Belarus opposition leader Tikhanovskaya, jailed for 18 years over protests. A Belarusian opposition leader who rallied mass protests against disputed leader Alexander Lukashenko has been jailed for 18 years. Sergei Tikhanovskaya was convicted of organizing riots, among other charges, following a trial condemned as a sham. He planned to challenge Mr. Lukashenko in the 2020 election, but was detained before the vote. His wife, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, took on Mr. Lukashenko, who claimed victory in the widely discredited poll. She claimed victory herself in the August election, but fearing for her safety, was forced into exile with her children the next day. On Tuesday, Ms. Tikhanovskaya questioned the validity of the court that tried her husband and told the BBC his sentence amounted to personal revenge by Mr. Lukashenko. So, wild times, and very sorry for the bad audio quality. I feel bad about it. But thank you, Bob Jonkman and X1, for hanging out and doing the fighting the good fight with me. Leon G, thank you very much. I want to be sure and mention that coming up in 1930 UTC is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe, and that is always a great time, so I would just encourage you, check that out, stick around, it's a good time. Hey, F. Fogg and Claudio M., welcome, thanks for being here. We've got a few stories about, and then we will, we've got two more stories, and then we're going to play a song. I'm going to keep playing. When I'm in the office, I think I'm going to play songs from the SDF musical compilations, because there's lots of good music on there, and it's pretty fun. So first up, Canada is offering up to $40 billion to compensate Indigenous children. Canada has pledged up to $40 billion, which is 31 billion U.S. or 23.6 billion pounds, in compensation for Indigenous children and families who suffered discrimination along foster care. In September, a top court upheld a 2016 ruling that the government underfunded First Nations services compared with those for non-Indigenous children. It ordered $40,000 payouts to each child who was in the on-reserve welfare system after 2006. The government initially said it would appeal the verdict, but it has come under intense public scrutiny after the discovery of over 1,100 unmarked graves at sites of former schools. Until as recently as 1996, Canada's residential school system separated Indigenous children from their families and sent them to boarding schools, while many were malnourished, beaten, and sexually abused. The school system was part of attempts to assimilate Indigenous children, forcing them to abandon their native languages and convert to Christianity. The government's compensation amount, expected to be formally announced on Tuesday, will be used to settle the 2016 tribunal, two other lawsuits, and fund two other lawsuits and fund long-term reforms in the Indigenous child welfare system. The United States has similar schools set up, but ever since they said they would investigate it, they have not put anything out. There's been no news from the government about it. I think there was one story that broke when they found a couple thousand kids and they decided, you know what? The United States committed genocide and killed millions of people, and we gotta just be quiet about it. So God bless the USA. At least Canada's trying to make things right. And just around the world, in general, this might be triggering for some people. Urgent action is needed to halt trafficking of children in orphanages. Immediate action must be taken to prevent trafficking and exploitation of children in orphanages, according to a report published Monday. International children charity Lumos says that an estimated 5.4 million children worldwide live in institutions that can't meet their needs and neglect their rights, and where they are exposed to multiple forms of exploitation and harm. Yeah, I guess you're right, Bob Junkman. And Leon G, both right. Both countries are still actively oppressing these Indigenous people, and Canada did want to appeal it. So I guess the only thing I'd say is at least there's some movement in Canada versus the United States. That's probably a more fair action. So anyway, this report came out and basically was letting the world know that lots of foster systems around the world are, yep, X1, you are 100% correct. Love is ruling the world. So anyway, orphanages are not safe places for kids, and the foster care system actively is hurting them. So that was the report. I don't know if anybody needed to know that. There's a great book called White Oleander that kind of talks about a girl that goes through the foster care system. I really like that a lot. So anyway, it's a fictional book, though. All right. I think it's fictional, anyway. Hopefully it is. All right. So it's about that time. We need to play a song. And so I'm hoping that this works. Given my computer state, it's a mystery. but fingers crossed. This song is called My Occupation. It's from a SDF member named M. Constant. That's Mike Constant, Constant. It's off of the SDF compilation volume 4. I'm hoping that audio is coming out for you. Thank you.
Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
All right. So I think we're back. We're going to try this. We've got about 9 minutes to get this wrapped up. So fingers crossed. Let's see if we can get the time just right. There we go. Okay. Well, I like that it threw out the title of the track I use, the timing track. I use that to keep track of how much time's left in the show and stuff. All right. Big shout out to everybody in comp, Jeff and One of Vaults and Claudio and Bob Jonkman, Ed Fong, and everybody. Thank you for being there, Snowdusk, if you're out there, and Jazzmez, wherever you are. Hope you're doing well. All right, so let's talk about some COVID stuff real quick. UK removes all 11 countries from the red list. The government has said that all 11 countries will be removed from the UK's travel red list from 4 a.m. on Wednesday. That's Angola, Botswana, Eswatini, Lesotho, Malawi, Mozambique, Namibia, Nigeria, South Africa, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. The red list was reintroduced in late November as a precaution after the emergence of the Omicron variant, but Health Secretary Saeed Javid said it had spread so widely the rules no longer had much purpose. Now that there is community transmission of Omicron in the UK and Omicron has spread so widely across the world, a travel red list is now less effective in slowing the incursion. While we will maintain our temporary testing measures for international travel, we'll be removing all 11 countries from the travel red list effective 4 a.m. tomorrow. So, some travelers have already paid thousands of pounds to stay in government-approved quarantine hotels, and there have been complaints of chaotic organization and inedible food during their stays. Mr. Javid said he had asked for urgent advice on whether those currently in managed quarantine would be able to leave early. He also said he was very persuaded by calls to reimburse people and hoped to make an announcement soon. So this is, they were knee-jerk reactions, and it'll be neat to see if they actually refund those who were staying in those hotels. Speaking of that, Kenya's High Court suspends mandatory COVID vaccination order. Kenya's High Court has suspended a government order to prevent those who are not fully vaccinated against COVID-19 from accessing services and entering public spaces such as national parks, bars, and restaurants. The country announced last month it required people to show vaccine certificates from December 21st to access in-person government services. But on Tuesday, High Court Judge Anthony Marima suspended the order pending a hearing on the case filed by a businessman who deemed the directive tyrannical and a gross violation of the Constitution. Campaigners, including Human Rights Watch, have criticized the directive as discriminatory and urged the government to abandon the plan, which also requires visitors from Europe to provide proof of full vaccination. So we'll see how that plays out. Kenya wasn't playing around before. And Ghana is making extra sure passengers wear their masks and are vaccinated. Ghana has announced plans to fine airlines $3,500 for each passenger who arrives in the country without being fully vaccinated. So this is putting the onus on the air carrier, not on the individuals. A joint statement by the Ghana Health Service and Ghana Civil Aviation Authority on Monday stated the new measure is part of plans to prevent the West African country from the spread of Omicron. The current increase in cases, together with the detection of the variant among international arrivals and the expected increase during the festive season, calls for urgent action. While Ghanaians who fly in without meeting the requirement will be allowed to enter the country and undergo a 14-day quarantine, non-Ghanaian nationals who are not fully vaccinated may be banned from entering the country and returned to the airport they departed from at the cost of the airline. The move comes as governments around the world increase restrictions to prevent the spread, and I guess as the UK says, I guess it doesn't matter. So anyway, Ghana has about 31 million people and has one of the best COVID-19 testing programs in West Africa, and has had 131,547 confirmed cases and 1,243 deaths since the pandemic began. Omicron was first discovered in South Africa and is all over the world, basically. So that's going on. All right, we've got about 5 minutes to go, I think. I'm pretty sure the airline's going to charge you whenever they get the bill from you. One last thing. In Romania, fears are mounting about a fifth wave. At a temporary COVID-19 intensive care unit at the University Emergency Hospital in Bucharest, set up to cope with the strain of Romania's devastating fourth wave, an elderly unvaccinated patient who's too thin and too sick to breathe without help of machines is losing their battle. There's no family at his side, as advance permission is needed to visit for periods of just 15 minutes. As the Delta variant of the coronavirus swept Romania in October and November, the Eastern European country was hit with its worst spike of infection since it began. In October, more than 400,000 positive tests were recorded, almost a quarter of the overall total, as well as the highest death rate in the world per capita, with 10,700 people dying. Hey, welcome, Buttstuff. Thanks for joining in. Basically, Romania is one of the least vaccinated countries in the world, and they have huge rates here, so very scary. Canada, we're running out of time, so just a couple of headlines. Canada apologizes for all the sexual misconduct in the military. Canada's defense minister joined the country's highest-ranking officer on Monday to offer an apology to survivors and victims of sexual misconduct in the Canadian Armed Forces 2 years after a formal apology was promised. No such apology from the United States, where very similar and worse things are going on. So here's some tech news for you. A Russian investigative website's been fined for breaking the foreign agent law. A court in Moscow has fined investigative website The Insider for failing to mark its material as being produced by a foreign agent, a mandatory requirement for those added to the state's controversial registry. The Taganka District Court on December 14th ordered The Insider to pay 1 million rubles, which is $13,600, for the lack of labels on its materials. The group was added to the foreign agent registry in July. The Insider's chief editor, Roman Dobrokhotov, said the website will not mark its materials with the foreign agent disclaimer because The Insider is registered in Latvia and not obliged to follow Russian law. So, we'll see. Upstart website battles Russian government. Oh, there's somebody here in the office. I thought nobody was here. Here's the last one. Microbes in the ocean and soils across the globe are evolving to eat plastic. The research scanned more than 200 million genes found in DNA samples taken from the environment and found 30,000 different enzymes that could degrade 10 different types of plastic. Today's the first large-scale global assessment of the plastic-degrading potential of bacteria and found that 1 in 4 of the organisms analyzed carried a suitable enzyme. The researchers found that the number and type of enzymes they discovered matched the amount and type of plastic pollution in different locations. Millions of tons of plastic are dumped in the environment every year, and the pollution now pervades the planet. Reducing the amount of plastic used is vital, as its proper collection and treatment of waste. Many plastics are hard to degrade and recycle. And that's kind of it. We're out of time. And, I thought nobody was on this side of the building, so I've been talking loud, and now I have to go.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow, and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.